Good morning. It's Friday again, and that means another episode of the Zogby Report, real and unrehearsed. My son and business partner, Jeremy, and I have been doing this podcast for a pretty long time now, and still happy with each other and still happy to do it. Those of you who know the drill know that we attack the big issue or issues of the day and discuss them, as always, in a respectful and quiet and calming sort of way. Hope we can be role models for those who haven't learned that fine art. This is not only real, but it's also unrehearsed. And so Jeremy never knows what the topic is, and I barely know until minutes before. But Jer, how are you doing?
It's a great way to start a Friday morning. I'm doing great.
Good. Okay. And it's a very nice day. So here we go. There is a brand new poll by Rasmussen. It shows that if the 2020 election were held again today, that Donald Trump would beat Joe Biden 51 to 41. If anything, a signal that Biden has cobbled together some pretty bad weeks since August and into September. And while I'm not sure that that's what would happen if the election were held today, and I'm not so sure that the Rasmussen numbers aren't maybe a little exaggerated for Trump, the message is clear. Biden's not doing well, and Trump, let's say, in addition to his own solid base of about 42%, represents the anybody but Biden factor. So it's more a statement about Biden than about Trump. What do you think about that? And then I've got a whole bunch of comments about that poll and about where Joe Biden stands.
Yeah. So to be purely objective, first off, we have to remind our listeners that we're independent pollsters. We've always been an independent polling company. You've never been afraid to poll for right-wing groups, left-wing groups, independent groups, the whole nine yards. There are some obvious, you know, extreme exceptions that we would never poll for, but we're independent. So I think we're in a position that we can rate these polls. So first off, Rasmussen is a GOP / Republican party leaning polling company. And so my rule of thumb, and I think you would agree with this, is that whatever poll they come out with that has a Republican or GOP theme, you probably have to first understand that it's going to be a little bit weighted towards the Republican by at least, you know, I'm going to say 5 to 6 percentage points higher than probably what you and I, our organization and others independent like us would be. So on the one hand, if you apply that to the numbers 51 to 41, and that's what you said, right?
Yes.
Because I did see the poll. It was 51 to 4. Okay. So that means even considering bringing his numbers down by 5 points, Trump still wins by a 5-point percentage. I believe that. It has been a horrific 3 weeks. I think the signals are very clear, whether it's Afghanistan, whether it's the border crisis, whether it's just a sense that his leadership isn't there. I think there are enough independents, probably not coming from the Democrat base. They know they like Biden. They're very comfortable with Biden. It's probably coming from the independents who are swinging it over. It's very believable. But again, on the other hand, you have to consider that Rasmussen is a GOP leaning. But like I said, my rule of thumb is anything they come out with that's Republican or GOP centered is usually 5 points higher. You apply that to the numbers 51-41. Trump still leads in this poll question. Another thing I want to say, and then I'll take it, I'll give the mic back to you, is a little demystification about polling for those who don't know. You do your best to write a fair survey script and you write an objective survey script, that's pretty easy to do, although it is an art. That's step one. The next hurdle is the methodology and the field work that you employ to make sure that the results are going to yield the best results. And then the final process really is the weighting. So you get your raw data after fielding a poll, in this case, a nationwide poll, and you look at the raw data and you say, where does this fall in line with both as the demographics, the demographic reality of this country right now, and a little bit of intuition, where do we think people stand in terms of party? Like, for example, if we were to imagine a major national election coming up, the next one, where would it go? Would it move a little bit more towards Republicans? Would it move a little bit more towards Democrats? And so that's the intuition, that's the forecasting part of it. And so Rasmussen is essentially forecasting that there would be a greater Republican turnout at this moment. And I think I would bring it down, instead of a 10-point lead, I would bring it down to a 5-point lead. So,
all right, fair enough. That's my take. I don't disagree with anything that you said, all of which spells that the President Biden is having a challenging moment in his presidency. All presidents do, you know, going back to JFK and Lyndon Johnson, when we started to, this profession started to measure more frequently job approvals and compare job approvals during crises, you know, both national crises and international crises. With that said, this is not Biden's finest moment. For those who would project that Biden is in real trouble, I don't think that that's the case. I think that there has been just a convergence of, on one hand, international crises that up to this point have been intractable. And on the other hand, I think some serious mistakes. Among those mistakes, the horrific pictures of border patrols actually beating up on Haitians at the border in Texas and forcing them back to Haiti and conjuring up in the process America's long history in treating blacks, including treatment of Haitians in the past, is a very bad image to be projecting. Secondly, during the very same week in which Biden makes a long and strong speech at the United Nations, trying to reassure American allies that we are not on the decline and that America respects its allies, a real mistake, surreptitiously signing a deal with Australia, and the United Kingdom to supply nuclear submarines to Australia in a strategic move against China. Meanwhile, leaving France, who had the deal with Australia, out in the cold and totally surprised by seeing it as a public announcement as opposed to a private diplomatic discussion. A genuine mistake there. Almost giving a sense that the president's words and vision for America's role in the world being undermined by his very own policy. So certainly a bad week. By the same token, within the week, if not the calendar week, then, you know, the last 7 or 8 days, Biden, you know, certainly buoyed by the California victory of Gavin Newsom, which we talked about, and breathing some hope and some life into the Democrats, giving them a focal point and message that's essentially anti-Trump going into the 2022 elections. But I have no doubt that if the election were held today, that it would be closer than it was in 2020. And it was pretty close looking at the Electoral College, and that also that Donald Trump, could possibly win. The issue now is going to be whether or not Joe Biden can get his sea legs, which is very possible, but it's really challenging because he's on the defensive on so many issues, including, is he ever going to be able to push through an infrastructure bill? Is he ever going to be able to push through a voting rights bill? Is he ever going to be able to push through a major initiative, not a minor one, but a major initiative on the environment? Right now, all of these negatives seem to be dominating the news and leading Biden, I think, to be making a series of big mistakes, which is to be assuring the American people, don't worry, I'm in charge, I'll get it done, I'll get it passed. But with each passing day, not only really not able to convince any Republicans, that was kind of a given, but still having a serious problem between progressives and moderates on the Democratic side. I am making it very, very difficult for Biden to fulfill his own rhetoric. So at the moment, he's in trouble. Let's see how good he is and whether or not he can get out.
Yeah, and we talked about last week on the state side, we talked about Newsom. And actually, I saw an article last night about Whitmer. And if I understand correctly, due to a poll, I think it was by Trafalgar Group, They showed that her lead was collapsing. And so what did she do? She turned around and, at least at the moment, of course, this could change, she has introduced bans, kind of like what DeSantis did in Florida, bans on wearing masks and vaccine mandates. And so that's a complete turnaround, 180, save face. She doesn't want to lose the election. We saw something very similar to Newsom. Of course, we know what happened to Cuomo when these governors, responded the way they did with the pandemic and brought about very harsh lockdowns and then couldn't even follow themselves. And in the eyes of voters, became mini dictators. And so what I would say to the Democratic Party, both at the governor level and at the federal level, and especially Joe Biden, is, and I'm being entirely serious here, they need to go back and read Aeschylus, the great Greek poet who said that the only sin is pride, and that pride is such an important thing to curb, because it leads to all other kinds of desires, the desire to rule, the desire to eventually you become vain, you become arrogant, and you can't accept your mistakes, and you don't know how to recover from your mistakes. We see Whitmer trying to do that. We'll see if Newsom can do that. Cuomo couldn't do that. The question is, can Joe Biden do that? Now, that ties into what you were talking about with the images that surfaced at the border. I don't know, what's going on there in terms of whether border agents were actually whipping. I really made a serious attempt to look at as many photos as I could. I saw the headlines saying that they were whipping them. The pictures that I saw, I don't know that they added up to actually looking like they were whipping them. I don't want to get into that debate. What I want to say is, I think that that's a deflection from the major issue is, why is it even happening in the first place, right? So you could focus on those images and let's believe that border agents were in some cases and maybe even in many cases whipping Haitians. The fact is, and we would all agree that that's awful, but the larger issue is, how did it get to the point where tens of thousands, and if not over the months, hundreds of thousands are pouring in? Why do we have this crisis in the first place? I think that that has to be the larger issue. Can Biden address that, recover from that, Should he admit to any mistakes? Should he take measures to address the problem at the root and not the surface? We will see. Now, you mentioned at the UN, he made a speech saying we're not in decline. You know, internally within the United States, that could seem like reassuring, but to the rest of the world, when the so-called leader of the free world is trying to assure people that his nation is not in decline, that can signal that, in fact, yes, they are in decline, you know, that the trying to cover up a denial or even speaking volumes like it is a denial of a reality, because much of the world sees that the United States is in decline. It only confirms it. So I think you put those things together and you have to ask yourself, like you said, is Biden finished? I would reframe the question, can he recover? I'm sure there are events that will come in the near future that he can seize upon, but he must learn the lesson of where Whitmer went wrong, of where Cuomo went wrong, and where Newsom went wrong. And I would stand by my statement, he should go back and read some of the early great plays by the Greek tragedy playwrights, especially Aeschylus.
Before we read Aeschylus, and I agree with you that that's good advice. Let's be fair also and note that Governor DeSantis in Florida, whose main challenger looks like it will be Val Demings, a former police chief of Orlando, three-term congresswoman from that area, and a name prominently mentioned as a possible running mate with Joe Biden in 2020, is now, it's a typical statewide Florida race. It's a one-point race. I believe DeSantis leading by a point, but I can't remember, it doesn't matter. It's just a typical Florida race, which is to suggest that that DeSantis could be in trouble, you know, on banning mandated masks, as well as Florida's Delta problem now, but COVID problem with young people, you know, appears to be, you know, not slowing down. But with that said, you've reminded me of a couple of things. One is that maybe not now, but at some point, Joe Biden is going to have to use what we call the old truth trick. America is in the decline. Restated, it's in the process of redefinition of its role in the world. You know, we have had, as a country, that opportunity to be a beacon and to have survived the Cold War when the Soviet Union imploded, thus being the sole superpower. But we have also experienced since that time the notion of being the sole global power that is maintaining the vestiges of colonialism and being the policeman of the world, building bases, which is tantamount to building new cities to buy U.S.-made products all over the world. And it's clearly unsustainable, all at the same time that, as Fareed Zakaria points out, the rise of the rest is happening. I mean, China is on a major spurt. Russia is still Russia, whether you call it the desire for global dominance, or on the flip side, the desire to defend itself against constant rings of attacks from the outside. But you also have other burgeoning powers in the world flexing their muscles, some of them not so pretty, like Iran, for example. Turkey is another example. Fact of the matter is that there are regional powers that are flexing their muscles, and the United States military, still the greatest in the world, but that just simply doesn't have the bandwidth to police the world, at the same time that the world is saying, we don't want you to police us in the first place. At what point does the United States come to grips with that? And when I think about that, you know, perhaps instead of Joe Biden on one end of the spectrum saying we're not in decline, we're still the number one power, that's sounding reassuring at a time when he's got very little to reassure about. On the other side of the spectrum, he knows politically he can't give a Jimmy Carter speech. You know, the country is going to hell in a handbasket. There's a malaise. We've got to get together and love and appreciate each other. We see how that worked out for Jimmy Carter politically. President Biden is in a bind here. I'm going to make a little news here, and I don't know how well this is going to rest, but with all respect to a very smart person, Tony Blinken, who's been around Biden forever and has been kind of the chief consigliere to Joe Biden from a long time ago, and certainly has the smarts to be Secretary of State, I think at some appropriate time, say the end of the year, because you don't want to move too precipitously, it's probably time that we changed secretaries of state and did a reset. And I would highly recommend that John Kerry be brought back in that role as Secretary of State. Had a pretty successful run at it in the closing years of the Obama administration. But anyway, I just said a lot. Your turn.
You know, you bring up Russia, and of course, in the Beltway, right? And not everybody in the Beltway, but a common theme in the Beltway is still this leftover Cold War hawk mentality, which is really amazing if you think about it. I mean, it's been almost 30 years since the fall of the Soviet Union, and these guys are, a lot of them are still in power. And they've even infused within a number of the next crop of generational leaders in the Beltway a similar sense. But here's some perspective about Russia. Russia and their defense spending. Their defense spending is about 10% of their national GDP. Think about that. Mm-hmm. And yet they are able to maintain sophisticated weaponry that, obviously, you know, if Jack LeMay, you remember Jack LeMay, what they called him, Jack Bombs Away LeMay, right? Mm-hmm. That psychopath during the Kennedy administration who had no problem hitting the red button and calculating, all right, well, if we can just lose 12 million Americans, but we could kill 120 million Soviets, that would be a good thing. Now, thank God we don't have anybody that crazy, but we still have to be concerned about all-out war and making the wrong move. Yet we have $1 trillion that we spend on our military budget, and Russia, who is deemed as the most, you know, one of the if not the evil empire of the world, only spends 10%. What does that say? I'm going to let our listeners, you know, marinate on that and think about what that really means. You talked about what can Joe Biden do, and I like your approach of changing the conversation away from, we're not in decline, folks. We just need to readjust ourselves. I think my humble opinion, and I really believe I'm right, the only thing we can do is to completely reverse the foreign policy that we have pursued for decades of mm-hmm. global dominance and global the global cop. And rediscover what JFK tried to do. Now, I'm going to make this comment, and I think this is an undeniable fact. What JFK did in terms of getting the rest of the world to love America during the most tense time in all of America's history, and I'm talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis, before that, leading up to it, and after, a very, very tense time, yet he was able to get the people of the world in various communist countries to love the United States and what it stood for. And JFK actually did more than what the Dulles brothers did. JFK, in 2.5 years of his presidency, did more than what Allen Dulles and John Foster Dulles could do, who set the agenda for decades to come. Think about that. And that's the only thing we can do, is try to recreate that in the 21st century. I would liken JFK to the father of soft power. And I know that soft power is a buzzword discussed in around the Beltway, but it's only a buzzword. It's not an actionable thing. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay. One correction. Curtis LeMay, to the best of my recollection, was the general, unless he had a nickname of Jack.
And actually, I just want to correct something that I stated earlier. Russian military spending is not 10% of its national GDP. It's actually 10% of what the total U.S. military spending is. I think that's an important fact.
But no, other than that, I think what the nations of the world are looking for are not both ends of the spectrum. On one hand, we are the global power, we are the dominating power, we are the policemen of the world, we are the leaders of the world, follow our lead, we are America. On the other hand, it's not looking for a farewell and valedictory. We're leaving the world stage. It's looking just for reassurance that America is there to help, America is there to support, but America is not there to dominate. And I would have been a whole lot more comfortable if that was the message that emanates. To be fair, I did not read Joe Biden's speech, and I have to. I only saw media reports of what he said, and so I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But if what emerged from there is an overstatement of what U.S.'s role can be and should be in the world, it was the wrong moment for that.
Yeah. So I think we're in agreement that the best way to go forward is the classic statement, get our backyard in order first. We've been talking about that for decades.
Yeah.
I think that became a major theme during the civil rights movement, where we were preaching to dictators around the world, yet we were sicking German shepherds and hosing down African Americans in the Deep South. We couldn't get our backyard together, and today it's beyond that. The education system, just the general tension between the various dichotomies, the various opposing groups. And so we have to look inward, and we don't have to cut our ties. Like, I don't believe in this sense that if you stop policing the world, that's isolationism. No, you trade with the world. You don't isolate yourself. You still engage in setting the discussion, but you set the tone of the discussion by setting the example. And we've got a lot to fix in this country. I maintain my position about Joe Biden. This is very harsh, and I'm sorry to say this, but Joe Biden is the commander in chief of division and chaos. He inherited, I understand he inherited a very tense moment, but he has done very little to cool the tension, to bring it down several notches.
I'm going to let you go with that. We'll pick that up another time. I want to end with a related but somewhat very different point. Maybe we can develop it in the future. Back to the border, back to the Haitians, but also back to those kids that have been separated from their families and their parents and other adults who are just languishing in these camps along the border. We have this serious contradiction of talking about 10 million jobs that can't be filled. And I've been doing a little bit of traveling, as you have, and everywhere you go, we're hiring, we need, please, huge billboards to handwritten signs, now hiring. And folks are saying that Americans don't want to work. Americans are saying, you know, $15 an hour, $16 an hour is not a good deal. And it probably isn't. On the other hand, we have hundreds of thousands of people at the border, including a substantial number of Haitians trying to get into this country who are saying, we want freedom, we want to escape, and we want to work. And this is among the things that bothers me, because it makes all the sense in the world. We have a history of hiring immigrants. We have a history of hiring refugees. We live in a community, Utica, that has rebuilt its entire economy and its reputation as a welcoming city. One third of the residents of this small city of Utica are refugees or children of refugees, and they work. They work hard, and then you look at the graduating classes from the local community and public and private colleges, and they're Burmese, they're Bosnian, they're Ukrainian, they're Iraqi, and you say to yourself, wow, what a great solution we found here. It seems to me that at a time when there is a serious, I'm going to put it in quotes, labor shortage, it's a bit more complicated than hiring them on Monday, but it's not so complicated that you can't find a solution and kill two birds with one stone. Hire immigrants and refugees. Mm-hmm. How about that? We leave it at that for now?
Well, you know, Kathy Hochul yesterday or 2 days ago basically hinted at that, because you're looking at, within the healthcare system of New York State, anywhere from, and I think this is conservative, 20-30% of workers who don't want to get vaccinated and have a deadline, I think, which is coming up Monday. And so either they're going to be fired, and I think if they've gone this far, I don't think they're going to rush and get the vaccine over the next couple of days. And she said, well, if that those 20-30% are gone by Monday, we're just going to hire immigrants. She said precisely that. And maybe we should talk about that next week, because that would be a whole other episode. Many things spinning around in my head, but we've got material for next week, right?
Yep, we certainly do. A couple of things, okay? Number one is we have a special edition I want to remind you of coming October 8th and the days that follow, where Parag Khanna, the author of Move, about the mobility in history and how mobility, especially by young people, will redefine the world as we know it. Best-selling author, and look forward to interviewing him. And then secondly, please continue to write to us, comment, tweet, retweet, do all that you can to spread the word. We're pretty proud of this podcast, and we want viewers and we want more listeners. Have a good week. You have a good week.
Have a great weekend.
Take care.